From WXXI News, this is Weekend Connections, the podcast. Always nice to have you with us. I'm Evan Dawson.
And I'm Megan Mack. It has been a tumultuous couple of weeks in the Pittsford Central School District, which has been dealing with a number of issues and incidents pertaining to race. Pittsford is one of the most highly ranked school districts in the state. It's also one of the whitest. But students of color say that they want to feel welcome and comfortable, and too often they don't.
We welcomed a panel of Pittsford graduates, all people of color who attended the district. In this clip, you'll hear stories from two of our panelists, Crystal Wilson and then Dr. Stephanie Jeter, both graduates of Pittsford Mendon High School.
This year will be 30 years, I hate to say that, that I graduated from Pittsford Mendon High School.
I didn't ask.
Yeah, you didn't. But to have not had a chance to talk about it, it brought up a lot of emotions, as Robin said, because you go through whatever your experience is, and I just never had a chance to talk about it. Now we talk about it, you know, we'll run into each other and hey, remember when? And we can, in some instances, we can laugh about it now. But going through it, it wasn't funny. So I was in the urban suburban program, and I went to Pittsford schools from first to 12th grade. So I had the opportunity for a long time to ride the bus. One of the things that I'll say as far as where I lived in the Culver Road, Harvard Street, Culver Road area. So I was fortunate enough, I didn't have to get up as early as other students. You had students getting up at 4 o'clock, 4:30 in the morning to get to Pittsford schools. So I had the opportunity, or at least where I was, I didn't have to get up as early. So when you think about all of that, I'm not coming to school and getting them at 4 o'clock or 4:30 in the morning because I'm being forced to. I'm coming because I want to, and I see this as a great opportunity. When I come, I want to be treated just like everybody else. I want an education just like everyone else. My parents want the same thing your parents want for you. So from first to 12th, as I said, I graduated from Pittsford Mendon, went to Barker Road Elementary, went to the middle school, went to the high school. One of the things that we saw once we got to high school, all of the things that have been mentioned before, but what I found and what we found, it was education on both sides. A lot of times you hear about urban, suburban, and the first thing you hear is, we don't want those city kids, which was what we were referenced as, that we don't want the city kids out here. So if you don't have any interaction and there's no diversity in your place of worship, in your place of unemployment, in your social communities, at your weddings, at your parties, your backyard parties, cookouts, if you don't have any diversity and the only in your circle and the only time you see someone of color is on TV or media and the message is crime or the message is drugs, now when you see me, this is what you think about and all you're thinking is the city. Mm. Whereas that's not everyone's truth. The issues that are in the city are the same as in the suburbs. We had students that drug-related, anything, suicide, the same type of issues. But then now I'm marked because you see the color of my skin and you think, here comes this city kid. And then sitting in classrooms when you are, yes, the only African-American or black child in the classroom, and, oh, city kids over the PA system, city kids, your bus is here. City kids, we need all city kids to come down to the office, or we need all city kids. And then now I'm already earmarked and I'm already, you know, out there on an island by myself. And all I want to do is just come in and get an education just like everyone else and make friends. So when I think about my experiences, yes, there are things that you think about trauma and you think about, wow, 30 years later, we're still having this conversation. Yes, we're having it. It needs to happen. But my heart broke when I started hearing about everything that was going on, and especially when I read the letter of the student, of her experience. And her letter was my letter. I could have written that 30 years ago. And you think about, wow, we're still here. And we've come a long way, but there's still so much more to do. What I take away from this is, with race relations in the country, race relations in Pittsford, it's not just Pittsford schools, as we've all heard. Mm-hmm. It's every community.
So I am grateful that we're having this conversation, because this has been happening, I know, in my experience and the students that I graduated with, for the past 30 years. And when this story came out, people from all over the country that have graduated from Mendon or from Pittsford schools, if you saw their responses, the long-lasting impact that these scenarios have on kids and into adulthood, it's trauma. And I think we don't recognize that when we're thinking about, okay, we'll rectify this in third grade, or, you know, we address that situation, but it has changed how people function. It changes their trust. It becomes part of your core beliefs. So how do you see yourself and how do you see the world around you? And that's true not only for the person of color, but it's also true for the white students who have learned that I don't have to change my behavior because the consequences aren't there or it doesn't impact me. So everybody's core beliefs are developed during this time. And I can say for me personally, I mentioned previously that some of this started for me in other school districts, but it changed how I even interacted when I got to Pittsford schools, because I was already kind of, my core belief was that I wasn't likable because all the kids in the school district didn't speak to me because I was the only black kid in the school. And so when I went to school and I looked around and I was the only black kid in the class, I'm not saying anything because I'm not going to allow you to reject me again. Then when I get to school and those things happen, or we do try to address it, and if those things weren't responded to, there was a situation where in the Commons at Mendon at Christmas time, there's a big Christmas tree that's put up. And there was there's several Santa Claus. People put different decorations on it. There was a Santa Claus there that was made out of black construction paper. And there was one that was made out of brown construction paper. The one with black construction paper had to be drawn on with chalk. And it had, you know, stereotypically large features, lips, nose, eyes. And we took them both down and took them to administration and said, look at these two pictures. And they said, oh, nobody meant anything by that. It doesn't matter. They didn't intend anything. Well, for us, perception is reality. Mm-hmm. And the perception of a black Santa Claus being what they represent as the African-American students in the school was our reality. That's how they were treating us, and that did matter, and it was not addressed. And when those things happen and we're not addressing what the kids that are really the victims of that are saying is occurring for them, we're not meeting the need of the kids. And you know, I'm a psychologist. I'm seeing this literally every week in my school, in my class sessions, that someone in Monroe County at various school districts is having a racial issue. We can't let them have 30 years worth of pain like we've had. We have to address it. And I do think that this is an opportunity for Pittsford. It's an opportunity for Pittsford to make the decision to be the leaders in this, because it's not just Pittsford School District.
Next, a conversation about how young men view the Me Too movement. A local organization called Resolve brought a documentary film to Rochester recently called Roll Red Roll. The film tells the story of the 2012 rape case in Steubenville, Ohio, in which two of the top high school football players gang-raped a girl at a party.
We wondered if that case would have been handled differently today, in the era of Me Too. In this clip, you'll hear Jack Brennick, who leads the Stand Up Guys group. Their aim is to help young men understand respect and consent. Brennick says Me Too is having an impact, but it might not be exactly what you think.
I have access to a lot of young men lately, and they seem to be very attuned to Me Too. But there's another back conversation that kind of goes with, yeah, too bad that happened. Like it's unfortunate that we have to behave as men.
That's fascinating to me. Give me a little bit more on that. I mean, so they say they're aware of Me Too, they're aware of the expectations, but they're lamenting that some of the conquests of the past might have to be changed?
Changed. We can't act the way we used to. We're going to get in a lot of trouble if you get caught talking like this or being like this. So there's a shift because of external pressure, but I don't know about the internal motivation. It might be coming along internally, but a little slower than what the external motivation is.
That's a very interesting sort of bifurcation. And the internal motivation changes throughout early education, starting young, right? That's part of what you do.
Oh, right? Yeah, sure. Yeah, I would go along with that one.
Well, I mean, yeah. I know that's what you do, but that's really it, isn't it?
Yeah.
How we talk about this with our kids, what we set in terms of expectations.
Yeah, the things that we say, how I define respect. I'll just give an example. I got a lot of nephews and nieces, so how I define respect to them, and when they go out and do things, you know, sometimes I articulate what I think is respectful. Hopefully I'm on point with them, because a lot of times their eyes are wide open, you know, from fifth grade till 12th grade. Sometimes, you know, everything's new, you know, so if I adopt that, I decide somebody's inferior or somebody's just an object and not a human, then they could just be open game for my brand of identity. And as I do this work, I shifted my identity again from communicating with the women who lead this kind of conversation. The things I speak about today in terms of men behaving more respectfully and better, I got it from women.
Finally, let's lighten things up with The Simpsons. The long-running show surprised us with an episode about upstate New York, but it wasn't pretty. In the show, Homer sings a song about how sad life is in upstate New York. We'll open this clip with that song. And then you'll hear us discuss it with a team from Ithaca, New York. They came in to discuss their new Live in Ithaca campaign, in which they're trying to lure new workers and residents by focusing on the positives in our region. But first, here are The Simpsons.
I spy a closed-down Toys R Us.
Aw.
I spy a bankrupt Sears and Roebuck.
Don't!
I don't know about this game. I find it a little... Circuit City overrun by wild dogs.
Booyah! How can you booyah this country's decline?
Cheer up, honey. We're headed to the one place that can never decline. Because it was never that great. Upstate New York! Start watching Fox News. Stop watching your weight. There is no fancy part of it. Upstate New York. They're fond of their booze. Hot wing sauce is great. I'm gonna clog my heart in it. Upstate New York. I wanna sleep in a city that never wakes. And find I'm fitting right in one of the gates. Par for the course. The Kodak plant closed, but I'm a longing to stay and go on disability in upstate New York. Can't make it anywhere, but I can. New York. Benedict Arnold fought here, baby.
Well, thank you, Simpsons, for that. You know what? When they say there is no fancy part of it, I totally disagree. Having written a book about the wine industry and the Finger Lakes, that is the fancy part of it. But I'm going to ask all three of our guests what they think here. I caught Dominic Recchio laughing at several points. I think we can feel okay with laughing at this. I heard a lot of defensiveness today. It's okay to laugh a little bit. How did you feel about it?
Yeah, I agree it's okay to laugh, but I think it's funny that I was laughing a little bit because at our chamber annual dinner this year, which happened a little less than a month ago, we had some performers do that exact same song, different rendition, about how great it is to live in Ithaca and be in Ithaca. So,
but just Ithaca.
Just Ithaca and Tompkins County is where they were focused on for the chamber. So that gave me a little chuckle in it.
Okay. What did you think, Jennifer, when you heard some of the specific references there? What did it make you think of there?
Well, quite honestly, some of those specific references are really geared more towards things that are happening nationally. They're not things that are unique to upstate New York. And so the specific business references, for example,
Kodak.
I'm thinking more about Toys R Us, Sears, Circuit City,
sure.
et cetera. You know, those are things that pertain much more to, you know, retail globally and nationally and what's going on with, you know, big box and old malls and retail nationwide. And so those aren't things that are unique to upstate New York. So that's a little bit of a cheap shot as far as I'm concerned. The other thing, I guess, just, you know, you're seeing a lot of defensive responses. But in a big way, I think, you know, New York's been doing a lot in the last 8 years and plus 8 to 10 years to revitalize upstate New York. You know, so you look at the billions of dollars invested in some of the specific communities they mentioned. You look at what's gone on in Buffalo and Syracuse and Rochester and throughout the Southern Tier. You look at all the downtown revitalization initiatives, the capital invested in infrastructure and parks and tourism, in arts and culture and historic sites, et cetera. And also in holding property taxes steady and trying to sort of change some of those trends. So, I think... You know, we all recognize that upstate New York has some challenges, but a lot of those things are challenges that are being felt in communities across the country. They're not only things that are happening where we live. So I'd like to look at some of the positive things that our state and our communities in upstate New York have been doing to respond to those challenges.
Okay, Bonita?
I couldn't agree more. Yeah, I had to smile with Dominic, too. It was entertaining. I guess I have to go back and find it now and watch the full episode. But I think Jennifer's point is well taken, and that is very true of the area in which we live. We have recognized that there are some challenges being in the where we have the big box manufacturers that are coming in and going out, and there are changes there, but the community has responded, and they've responded in a way that is very positive. It addresses the needs that we have. I noticed that he makes no mention at all of the strong education systems that we have and of some of the industries that are unique to our area. Certainly the wine industry is second to none. Growth in cider mills and other distilleries, as well as many tech and startup companies that are beginning to populate our landscape. So there's a lot of good stuff. So when we're done laughing at Homer, we get back to work.
We thought it was pretty funny. We were talking about that after
we did.
The show.
It was a funny song. And you know what? You gotta laugh at yourself and maybe take the opportunity to hear what the national opinion is of your region, even if it's extreme, and then work to deal with it. But
at least they're talking.
Keep laughing. Keep laughing. Thanks for joining. It's always nice to have you on Weekend Connections, the podcast. You can hear Connections, the talk show, every weekday afternoon from noon to 2 on WXXI AM 1370, WRUR 88.5 FM, and WEOS, that's Finger Lakes Public Radio, 89.5 FM.
We are also on the WXXI mobile app. He's Evan. I'm Megan. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you Monday.